Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
We had an apartment in the city. Me and Loretta like living there. Well, it's been years since the kids have grown. A life of their own. Left us alone. John and Linda live in Omaha. And Joe is somewhere on the road. We lost Davy in the Korean War. And I still don't know what for. Don't matter anymore. You know that old trees just grow stronger, and old rivers grow wilder every day. Old people just grow lonesome, waiting for someone to say hello in that.
I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, we're beginning our regional authors series with an unusual self-published memoir from a central Wisconsin man, Charlie Schoenfeld. It's titled, A Funny Thing Happened on My Way to the Dementia Ward. The book details his relationships with the victims of Alzheimer's disease as he entered a second career late in life working as a certified nursing assistant at North Central Healthcare in Wausau. He became interested in the people living out their last days at the facility after his own mother became an Alzheimer's patient there. Mr. Schoenfeld writes, the dynamics of daily life on a dementia ward, my encounters with coworkers, visiting family, and particularly the residents I helped, resulted in a train wreck of emotions that both broke and filled my heart. And he says about the disease, quoting again, human dignity is a birthright that does not end with illness. Alzheimer's is a thief that robs people of their past, strips away their future, and leaves a life unfinished. Yet inside the walls of a dementia unit, human dignity lives. This is an emotional topic, and it is rare to see a firsthand account of the lives of Alzheimer patients that is simultaneously touching, funny, and serious. Now, if you know someone who is stricken with the disease and you'd like to share your story with Charlie Schoenfeld, who knows more about it than most of us, we encourage you to call the program at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Charlie, it's an amazing book. And you were a truck driver for most of your life. You ended up with this second career as a certified nursing assistant on a dementia ward. How in the world did that happen?
Hi, Glenn. Well, I discussed that early in the book. I drove for United Parcel Service for 27 years. At the time, my elderly mother was living with my wife and I. There's longevity on her side of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And she did quite well, but eventually, by the time she was in her mid-90s, began experiencing falls. And it got to the point where we no longer could provide the care she needed. And we moved her into North Central Healthcare, which is just down the block from my house. After about a year on the nursing home proper end of the building, she was moved at 98 years of old to the dementia end of the building. With my close proximity to the nursing home, I visited her every day. And you can appreciate walking into a dementia unit for the first time. There's some apprehension, and I tried to kind of ignore the other folks for a while. I tried to arrive at mealtime and bring a snack along for her and just be with her, but I found that I couldn't ignore the other residents. And much to my surprise, I began to feel not only empathy, but a need to try and communicate and to brighten their day, and I seemed to have a little knack for it.
So you went from this reluctance that most people would have of even walking into a dementia ward to actually caring for and I would even say, based on reading your book, loving a lot of the people that were there.
That's a very true statement. And as you well know, the book is a true story. This is a memoir, and I would argue that I'm not the real author. The residents on the ward itself and their families, who play a big part, actually are the real authors. I just happened to be in the room and wrote down the truth.
Are you still working there?
It'll be 2 years in April since I retired.
What prompted you to not only work on the dementia ward, but then to take all of these stories, write this book, and then self-publish it and promote it?
Well, I'm a first-time author. My family, I've dabbled in writing around the house for years, usually mm-hmm. having something pertaining to humor. But my family always encouraged me, geez, you should write a book about something. And I never thought I had a book in me until my experience at the nursing home. And once I was approaching retirement, I started jotting down notes and putting some ideas together. And once I was fully retired, the whole process took me over. I found myself sitting at my computer at 3 o'clock in the morning, and that's went from there.
Well, you've got the book in a number of locations around town, and I'm just going to go through the list of them here in case people who are listening want to pick it up and see what it's all about. It's at Yankee Books in Wausau, the Aspirus Wausau Hospital Gift Shop, the Friends of North Central Healthcare Gift Shop, Book Finders in Stevens Point, Book World Stores in Merrill, Marshfield, Stevens Point, Wisconsin Rapids, and Wisconsin Dells, the Pine Line Cafe in Medford, the Planted Seed in Wausau, Crossroads Books in Eau Claire, quite a number of places where you can pick it up, and people can learn more about you in the book at charlesschoenfeld.com. Now, Schoenfeld is spelled S-C-H-O-E-N-F-E-L-D. So it sounds like phonetically like Schoenfeld, but it's Schoenfeld.
Correct.
How's the book doing?
I'm overwhelmed, Glenn. I hope you can appreciate it. As a first-time author, when I got to the point where it looked like the book was actually going to become reality, I knew I needed to get reviews, and I was very concerned sending it out for the first time. No one in the world had read it, with the exception of my wife. I sent it to some pretty credible people, the executive director of the Alzheimer's Association for the state of Wisconsin, to Brenda Avadian, who has a website. She's in California, the Caregiver's
right.
Voice. To Jane Dolan, the founder of the Aspirus Wausau Memory Clinic, and a few others. And much to my great surprise and appreciation, the reviews were glowing.
And you got good reviews from people who are medical professionals dealing with Alzheimer's.
You know, that's very interesting. I feel a little awkward. I've been doing quite a few talks, and I feel kind of ill at ease when I'm talking to real health professionals. Like, who am I to be speaking to someone with degrees and more years of experience, etc.? But what I'm finding is that doctors and nurses, to some extent, have to keep themselves at a distance from the people they help.
Well, they approach it clinically.
Absolutely.
And you approached it emotionally. You actually became emotionally tied to a lot of the Alzheimer's patients on that ward, became friends with them. You went so far as to meet with their family members and then even go to their funerals after they passed on. That's pretty extraordinary.
I would have to let others judge that, Glenn. That it's just what seemed to come natural to me. I didn't plan it that way. I just followed where my heart led me, and that's what I did.
Now, it's a book that's not just serious. It's also very, very funny. You've got lots of stories about the crazy things that crazy people do. Did you get any criticism or blowback from people who thought this just isn't an appropriate way to treat this kind of a subject?
Not to this point. Everyone has been extremely positive and grateful, and that's the truth. I haven't had any negative responses whatsoever. My wife, from time to time, sits at the computer and cries at some of the emails we've got coming in. They're so touching.
How have the folks at North Central Healthcare reacted to the book?
quite well. It's a great place. Lori Keppel has done an amazing job with North Central Healthcare, turning it around. They're now ranked in the top 10% of nursing homes in the United States with a 5-star ranking.
But you kind of peeled off any level of secrecy that there might have been in how things work treating Alzheimer's patients and in a facility like that. It's a very positive reflection on the healthcare facility, but it's very out front. I had the feeling that after reading the book, I knew exactly how things operated inside that facility. You didn't get any negative blowback at all about that?
None whatsoever. Everything has been positive.
Well, let's talk about Alzheimer's. How many people does it affect right now? How many of us, percentage-wise, will end up in a dementia ward before it's all over?
Well, we're in an epidemic, Glenn. The baby boomer generation has arrived, as you well know. Alzheimer's is age-driven. At age 65, 1 in 8 people will demonstrate signs of dementia. By age 85, that number shrinks to 1 in 2. From the years 2000 to 2008, while the death rates from other major diseases such as breast cancer, prostate cancer, stroke, heart disease, mm-hmm. the HIV virus, all dropped, the death rate from Alzheimer's disease rose 66%. Until a cure is found, this trend is going to continue.
And you write that there are misconceptions about this disease. People think it's only about forgetfulness. But Alzheimer's is something that will kill you if you get it, if you don't die from something else first.
That's exactly right. There is no cure. Most people will not die from Alzheimer's, the people that are affected by it. They'll end up dying from heart problems or infections or pneumonia or something to that effect. However, if no other serious illness intervenes, Alzheimer's will shut your body down to the point, and that's so much what people, and myself included, it's hard to fathom the damage this disease will do to a person. It shuts you down completely to the point where you won't be able to swallow. Your brain can't figure out how to tell your throat how to swallow food. And you will eventually just curl up and basically go back into the womb.
It's also a disease that creeps up on you. How do you know you may be getting it or a loved one may be getting it?
Well, obviously there are signs. And while forgetfulness is certainly a common sign. Getting lost in places that should be familiar, putting things in where they don't belong, car keys in the refrigerator, that sort of thing, that kind of behavior that would really strike someone as odd is a definite warning sign.
We're talking to Charlie Shainfeld. He is the author of A Funny Thing Happened on My Way to the Dementia Ward. It's a self-published book, and it is flying off the shelves. It details his experience in a second career as a certified nursing assistant working on a dementia ward at North Central Healthcare. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Charlie's going to read to us from his book when we come back. We are going to take a short break. And if you'd like to join the conversation, here's the number, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, working to build the local economy and strengthen the community by making local business everybody's business. Learn more about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Our guest, Charlie Shainfeld, the author of a new book, self-published book, called A Funny Thing Happened on My Way to the Dementia Ward. Charlie, why don't you read a passage of the book from us for us right now?
I'll do my best, Glenn. I obviously can't read an entire chapter. I devoted the book or set the book up in a way where certain chapters are aimed at humor, while others chapters deal with the realities of Alzheimer's. So this is one of the earlier chapters where I'm trying to get a few laughs, and it had to do with my CNA class, where I mentioned that there were 9 of us, 8 cheerleaders and me. You have to appreciate I just turned 56 years old. As we were going through the class, it became apparent I wasn't going to be able to do the personal cares. That's the toileting and that sort of thing. And where I'm picking up the reading here is we're leaving classroom behind and we're going to our first experience with bathing someone. Here we go. Walking down the hallway, my classmates laughed and talked as if they were on their way to pizza and a movie. Meanwhile, I struggled through a personal nightmare that grew worse with each step. The only thing my seizing brain was able to pass along to the rest of me was, "Oh God, oh God, oh God." It turned out not to be a bath, but a shower. To me, that was about the difference between a firing squad and a beheading. Each of us had our own resident and our own instructor there to help us along. That reassurance brought not 1 ounce of comfort. An elderly woman was brought in wrapped in a blanket. About this time, I started feeling faint. I watched in amazement as one of my classmates actually volunteered to go first. I wanted to go last. Maybe I would get lucky and the world would end before they could get to me. Suddenly, the nurse turned to me and said, "Chuck, are you ready to jump in?" I wanted to tell her I'd prefer to have my fingernails pulled off with the pliers. Devein a boatload of shrimp. Root for the Vikings. You can throw in ant problems. Do it for me and I'll give you my house. Oh God, oh God, oh God. Trembling with fear, I heard my own voice betray me. Well, of course I'm ready. My resident was a male. I couldn't make up my mind if that was a good thing or a bad thing. I took a deep breath and held it, closed my eyes, then stepped in. Before I knew it, I was on my hands and knees searching for those hard-to-reach spots. What did I just touch? Oh, God, oh, God, oh, God. Water pouring over me helped to distract my panic-stricken brain. Time stood still while I gasped for air and scrubbed ever so gently. In self-defense, my mind had wandered off to a place far, far away when mercy finally arrived. A tap of a hand on my shoulder, and it was over. I'd done it.
Charlie Shainfeld, author of A Funny Thing Happened on My Way to the Dementia Ward. The cover of your book, Charlie, shows you and two patients, two guys, Sid and Eddie, wearing blaze orange caps with a life-size deer decoy with a noose around the neck. Tell us about Sid and Eddie's last deer hunt.
Well, that was quite a day. I should explain about the picture that the nursing home doesn't make a practice of running around with a camera taking pictures of residents. That's usually reserved for special occasions, the holidays and things like that. So on this particular day, I was just doing my job with no idea that there was going to be someone with a camera who wanted to take a picture or that someday I might be writing a book. I was concerned about not paying enough attention to the guys. Our population was predominantly female. It was November, and I'm a lifelong deer hunter. So I questioned family members about the guys who had been hunters in the past, and I brought all my deer hunting equipment to the dementia ward. That consisted of course, blaze orange hats, deer antlers for rattling. I had doe bleats and buck grunts, and I brought the life-size deer decoy, some rope, some binoculars.
Into the dementia ward.
Yeah, there aren't any trees or snow in the background. This was right on the dementia ward. But it's a true story, as I keep reminding you. And we held a hunt right there, and we happened to get lucky, and we got a nice buck that day.
Eddie, I guess, is a guy who was given credit for shooting it. How did he react?
Well, Eddie Eddie looked a little puzzled, but some slaps on the back and handshakes, and he bought into the whole concept. What I really got a kick out of was asking Eddie, as you well know, Glenn, dragging a deer out of the woods is hard work. And I asked Eddie, I'd put the rope around the deer's neck, and I said, Eddie, will you help me drag him out? And he took a long, deep breath, a lot of thought process going on there, and finally said to me, well, let's get it over with.
So this experience brought back some long-suppressed memories that these guys had stored up inside of them that you probably wouldn't have been able to access otherwise.
Absolutely, and geez, I hate giving away parts of the book. But that wasn't my favorite part of the day. I absolutely loved that moment, and so did Eddie's family when they heard about it. But earlier in that process, when I was passing out the blaze orange hats, we had a resident named Ned who had aggressive early onset Alzheimer's, and had reached, when he came to us, he could walk and talk, but had quickly deteriorated to where he was no longer speaking. I waved a blaze orange hat in front of his face and asked if he would want to come along, and a man who no longer spoke answered, yeah, let me go get my, before his voice trailed off, and we lost him again.
Charlie Shainfeld, the author of A Funny Thing Happened on My Way to the Dementia Ward. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. When we come back, we're going to talk about the patients on the dementia ward of North Central Healthcare and some of their funny, some of their serious, and some of their very touching stories. 1-800-780-9742 if you want to join the conversation. It's 1-800-780-9742. Back after this news.
I am an old woman named after my mother. My old man is another. The child is grown old. Dreams with thunder. Desire. This old house would have burnt down a long time ago. Make me an angel that flies from Montgomery. Make me a poster of an old rodeo.
Our guest today on Route 51 is Charlie Shainfeld, the author of A Funny Thing Happened on My Way to the Dementia Ward, detailing his experiences during a second career after he retired from his first career as a UPS truck driver, a career as a certified nursing assistant, helping to care for Alzheimer's patients at North Central Healthcare in Wausau. Now, the book is self-published. It's been distributed to various places around North Central Wisconsin. It is flying off the shelves. And, Charlie, it's been not only well-received by the medical community, but you've been invited to book fairs and even to speak before people who are dealing with this problem in a clinical sense.
I've been all over the place suddenly, Glenn. All types of different groups. Aspirus had me up for speaking to hospice students. I've been obviously to bookstores for book signings and that sort of thing. I had an interesting experience a week ago at North Central Technical College, where Bobby Fisher's class on gerontology had me speak. And she apparently likes the book because she's going to incorporate it into her class curriculum. And I've been invited back next Monday to the Tech to speak to Carrie Vergeen's introduction to human services class.
Amazing. All from a guy who's never written a book before.
Well, not only that, but I think I had took art class 12 times in order to get enough credits to get through high school. So look, now my book's in a college. So
1-800-780-9742. Let's go to the phones. Dave in Wausau, you're on with Charlie Shainfeld. Hello, Dave.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. Hey, great show, Glenn, and great guest, of course. I'm going to come right out and say that I'm acquainted with Chuck. I'm sitting here with my mother, who's been in a skilled facility. She's under my arm right now. And I won't cry. I'll try and get this out without crying because I can't cry in front of my mother, right, Chuck?
Right, Dave.
In the 4 years that I've been dealing, well, I guess it's really going on close to 3 years, my mother's dementia is, I guess, would be clinically described as severe at this point. I've learned a lot of things that, after reading Chuck's book, it became apparent to me that he had learned. And through the book is sharing with us all. And one of the most beneficial things, one of the most beneficial things I learned from the book, and I had already gotten some courses on it from my mom before reading the book, was using the gift of humor. And I think it's an especially important one for loved ones. It's also important for caregivers or professional caregivers also, of course, but for loved ones, Charlie really does a good job of bringing out the fact that if the behavior your loved one is exhibiting is frustrating you to the point that it's moderating your behavior, they pick up on that and it only makes it worse. And I think Charles would agree with me that one of the things he learned was humor is the magic elixir. And because it's like throwing water on the fire as opposed to gas. My mother started clenching her teeth for a while, and both my brother and I are her primary caregivers, supplementing the professionals here, of course, in the facility she's in. But, know, when she started grinding her teeth, which is a common elderly dementia symptom manifestation, it really bothered my brother. Of course, he's here way more than I am. And, you know, he knew enough to remove himself from her presence when it was bothering him, because even though they are regressing and losing their minds, they still pick up on stuff.
Dave, thanks so much for the phone call. Let's give Charlie a chance to respond. Charlie, the importance of humor in treating people at this end of the life journey.
Well, first of all, thanks, Dave, for calling. And I've met Dave face-to-face once, but I've corresponded with him via email, Facebook things, and he's a gentleman with a big heart, and I appreciate his calling in. The humor, without humor, I couldn't have done the job, for one thing. Otherwise, it's just going to beat you up too hard. But humor bonds people, and it doesn't have to be people with dementia. It bonds strangers. It promotes familiarity, and it's something everyone needs in their life, and it's a strong ally in this battle and dealing with dementia patients.
Dave, thanks so much for the phone call. Let's go to Christy now in northern Wisconsin. Christy, you're on with Charlie Shainfeld.
Well, hi there. Never called your radio station before. I thought about it, and an avid public radio listener. But I'll tell you what, I could talk to this man for hours on end about this subject. My mother, my identical twin sister, myself went through this with my mother for about 10 years. And when my mom and dad were alive together, it wasn't so bad because my dad had physical problems, but my mom was a mental, my dad was a physical. So together they were fine. And then, of course, my dad, one of them passed on. It was my dad. And then my mom came to live with me for 6 weeks after that happened. And I think only people that have been through this can understand this statement. It was the very, very best time and the very worst time of my life. It was just the most incredible experience. One other thing I wanted to mention to people, that it's a really kind of a hard concept, I think, to accept, but my mom didn't eat for 5 years. People with Alzheimer's and dementia lose the ability to want food or need food. And, I mean, she literally didn't put anything in her mouth for 5 years. She lived on Ensure, and she had two or three of those a day. She loved them, but she couldn't take the food down. And so that was an interesting experience, but she survived okay on the Ensure. And then one other quick thing I want to mention is that my mom was eventually, after things didn't work out 100% with living with me, we put her in an assisted living, which, of course, was a lockdown unit. And I tell you what, there's not a more fun place to be than in there with those people. They accept you for what you are. You can laugh. You can have fun. It is a blast to be in there. And that's all I want to say. Thank you for taking my call.
Christy, thanks so much for calling. And thanks for being a first-time caller. Charlie Shainfeld, your reaction.
A person after my own heart. We obviously saw things very similarly. I should mention there is a website contact for people that are caregiving for a loved one in their home. I would suggest they try Googling Memory People. It's an organization that was founded not that long ago by a gentleman named Rick Phelps from Ohio. He's 57 years old and suffering from early onset. And the group consists of people from all over the world who are caregiving for a family member and calling in with their daily struggles and looking for help and tips and reassurance.
Well, Charlie, this is a tough job that you had. It's something that not everybody could certainly do, let alone love it, which you ended up loving not only the job but the people that you dealt with on a daily basis. What do you do when you're alone with a patient in an elevator and he acts like he's standing in front of a urinal?
Well, you scream stop. I remember that part. That one didn't work out so well, but that gentleman was a wonderful man. That incident happened early in our relationship. I got to know him a lot better. He's gone now, but I value our time together, and he certainly created a memory for me.
You devoted a chapter to Sally, who had been in a terrible car accident, was almost completely paralyzed. Tell us about her.
I've got to take a deep breath for a moment. Sally was someone, the person I was closest to throughout the entire 6.5 years I was there. I decided not to read anything this evening about Sally because the emotions become difficult for me, and a person needs to read the entire chapter about Sally to get the greatest impact of what I was trying to say. But we had a very, very close relationship. She ended up needing me a lot, and I've got her picture at home, and it's going to be there as long as I'm around.
I got her picture in the book, too. And she could only move one hand and her head.
Yes, that's right.
You also have a phrase from Forrest Gump: new residents are a lot like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. Tell us about that first day on the job and one of your first patients, Mabel.
Mabel. I got beat up that day, but don't get the impression. I hate it when people have the concept that because people have Alzheimer's or dementia that they're automatically mean. That's absolutely not true, and Mabel needed medication that we got under control. But the day she arrived happened to be my first day working at the healthcare center. She made her way around with the aid of a walker. And she was causing quite a stir, and my new boss told me, your job today is to watch her. And it was quite a lesson. And as I stated in the book, I went home. I was hoping to learn a lot that first day, but went home learning just two things. One, that Mabel was not wearing a bra, and two, that she had a real nasty left jab.
You also write that not judging a dementia patient by how they acted were easy words to recite but harder to live by. And you talk about Marvin, a patient that you had problems with, and you later found out he was a war hero.
Yeah. When I say I had problems with him, that's probably not quite accurate, Glenn. He just was someone I could not reach. I tried with every resident and had great success with many, limited success with others, but I just couldn't get close to this gentleman. And he didn't want to take part in any activities. He walked around fine on his own. But for whatever reason, he just left me frustrated. When I went to his funeral, I did it out of respect for the family more than anything. And then I got to see, of course, the pictures of a young man, his ingenuity, and then the write-ups about him in the Korean War that beat me up a little bit.
Charlie Schoenfeld, the author of a self-published book, A Funny Thing Happened on My Way to the Dementia Ward. It is flying off the bookshelves. It is being put into curricula in north central Wisconsin. It's been positively reviewed by people who deal with Alzheimer's. And Charlie is with us for another 10 minutes on this radio show. If you'd like to talk to him, 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Going to take a short break, and then Charlie's going to read another passage from the book.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More at umr.com.
Charlie, another passage from the book, A Funny Thing Happened on My Way to the Dementia Ward.
Glenn, this little bit I'm going to read now, I'm talking about special moments and how I wish I would have recorded them, for so many have been lost to me. But each December, our unit put on a Christmas party for residents and their families. Despite all the work, it's an event the staff enjoys. The facility supplies musical entertainment, snacks, drinks, and special desserts. The CNAs put extra effort into making sure each resident looks their best. The women have their hair done and the men wear dress shirts and ties. While the rest of the staff wears reindeer or elf hats, I suffer a slow hot death underneath a Santa Claus suit, fake beard, and winter boots. We dance, make our way from one table to the next, making sure we visit with everyone. Seeing these people smiling, laughing, having a good time brings so much satisfaction you want to squeeze out every last drop. The party was nearly over and people began to leave as I made my way around the crowd for the second or third time. I noticed Francis sitting alone. His family had apparently left. Francis was a husband, father, veteran, pilot, and tree farmer. Now he has Alzheimer's, unable to walk, talk, or express himself in any way. Other than sitting near a group when something is going on, he takes part in no activities. While I wouldn't describe his face as expressionless, it was always difficult to decipher what he thought or felt. There were times when he seemed to be smiling, but it wasn't something I welcomed. The expression could appear somehow sinister. I'd been jumping and jingling, doing my best Saint Nick impressions, when I knelt down and patted him on the knee. Merry Christmas, Francis. I hope you and your family had a good time. His body had not yet forgotten how to cry. With that awkward smile across his lips, tears trickling down his cheeks, Francis took hold of my wrist, raised my arm, and kissed the back of my hand. Sometimes all the hours and days in a lifetime seem of little value when compared to one special moment.
How dangerous was this job, Charlie? How often did you find yourself physically threatened by an out-of-control patient? Because that was part of it, wasn't it?
Yes and no. Not really on the dementia ward. Very limited.
But they took you to other parts of the facility.
There's a chapter called Dr. Green, Paging Dr. Green. That is lower D is a unit that deals with people, not Alzheimer's patients, but rather it's a short-term unit for people with psychotic problems, drug and alcohol abuse, threats of suicide. And we had to take mandatory self-defense classes and help out on that unit when they had a problem because the unit staff was mostly female. I had some interesting confrontations down there.
Well, you managed to make it through all right, but you talk about some of your cohorts who ended up with welts and bruises and bumps. And
oh, for sure, yeah.
You do unusual things for patients, at least as an outsider, it seems like it was unusual. You write about taking one particularly troubled lady home with you to sit in your backyard on a summer day. Tell us about that.
Well, that's back with Mabel, the lady.
Oh, that's Mabel again.
That's Mabel again from my first day of work. And when that particular day happened, some time had passed. And we did have medication that helped control her moods a little more. But still, she was difficult and had bad days. But it was my day off, and I live a half a block away, and I brought her to my house. She was in a wheelchair by then. And I put her on the deck in my backyard and had prepared some food I knew she would like. And we enjoyed a quiet afternoon. It was a good day for Mabel.
You also talk about a patient named Elsie, who you used to take on long walks and who never said a word for months on end, not a single word, until she said three words to you.
Yeah. Elsie, actually, it was years and years she hadn't spoken. We went on hundreds of walks together, and we was alone in a room with her one day when I was just getting her to take her for another walk, when she turned to me and said, "I love you."
That makes it all worthwhile, doesn't it?
It was the shiver of a lifetime.
You also write about political leaders, local political leaders who would come through the facility and do tours, and they never seemed to linger very long on the ward with the Alzheimer's patients. Do you wish there was a little more attention?
Yeah. I didn't want to dwell on that. I know these are good people trying to do the right thing. I'm not arguing that. It's just that the process seems so distant. They come through in large groups, in single file. They basically march through the unit and they're back out the door. They haven't talked to anyone. Obviously, someone from the facility is taking them around, showing them. I wish they would sit down and spend a little more time.
But it's a difficult thing for people to deal with, and it's something that a lot of us just try to block out and not even think about. You also write, there's a great deal of need hiding behind closed doors and drawn curtains. Caregiving at home for a loved one with Alzheimer's is more than difficult. Caregivers face physical and emotional exhaustion. And you write that the families of these patients come in four distinct categories: those that laugh, those that cry, those that act as helpless as the person they've come to visit, and those that don't visit at all.
Well, that's my description, my observation. There are groups that can come, that they come the most often, and they can still see the joy. There are others that come, and God bless them, they come even though seeing the joy is difficult and they're brought to tears. A third group that you can see how uncomfortable they are by the look on their face. At least they show up, and they do their best. And then there's these other people that I try my best not to discuss because they're never there.
And you talk about one patient, Nora, who still remembered part of her past. And I think she was a Sunday school teacher, and you could get her to talk about that. And then you write, Alzheimer's would eventually take that from her too, those memories. It took until there was nothing left to give. Even at death, it robbed a person. Should a person have the right to think, to recognize loved ones? Shouldn't a person have the right to pray? And you say, I hate that disease. It does take everything from you and leaves nothing behind.
There's just nothing more to say to that, Glenn. That's the description. Like we said before, if some other illness doesn't intervene, Alzheimer's will just keep chipping away until there's nothing left.
And again, Charlie, you can get the book, Funny Thing Happened on My Way to the Dementia Ward at Yankee Books in Wausau, Aspirus Wausau Hospital Gift Shop, Friends of North Central Healthcare Gift Shop, Book Finders in Stevens Point, Book World Stores in Merrill, Marshfield, Stevens Point, Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin Dells, the Pine Line Cafe in Medford, The Planted Seed in Wausau, Crossroads Books, in Eau Claire, and you can find out more at Charles Schoenfeld. That's S-C-H-O-E-N-F-E-L-D.com. CharlesSchoenfeld.com. Charlie, thanks so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you to you, Glenn, and to Rick as well.
All right.
Appreciate it.
We want to thank Charlie Schoenfeld, author of A Funny Thing Happened on My Way to the Dementia Ward. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producers, Jane Ritger and Crystal Bennis. Special music today by John Prine, Bonnie Raitt, Waylon Jennings, and the Beatles. Next Thursday on Route 51, our regional authors series continues with Sandra Kring, a Central Wisconsin writer whose best-selling work, The Book of Bright Ideas, has been followed by a new release, A Life of Bright Ideas. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Until next week, we're heading out of town.
Across the universe, thoughts meander like a restless wind inside a letterbox. They tumble blindly as they make their way across.